Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ron Spritzer. I appear in this case on behalf of the federal appellants. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. All parties in this case agree that the case is moot. The question before the court is whether the district court's judgment should be vacated.
I know all parties agree on
that. But it's not obvious.
I have a question. Right. The delisting rule is subject to judicial challenge.
Right.
We have no way of knowing the outcome of that.
That's correct. And it has, in fact, been challenged in the district
right.
court.
So why is that? Why is the case moot?
Well,
just because the parties say so doesn't make it so.
That's undoubtedly true, Your Honor. We think it's moot because while there is a possibility we would lose, and a more than realistic possibility that Wisconsin would apply for a further depredation control permit if the rule, the delisting rule, were set aside, we think that's not a sufficiently definite likelihood. We believe we are going to win that case, and we believe that that is sufficient.
Well, is that the way we analyze mootness? I thought the party seeking to claim it had to show there was no possibility of a return to the alleged offending event. You can't make that assertion. It was bizarre to me that the party, I kept reading, like, why do they think this is moot?
Mm-hmm.
You can't make that assertion under established law.
I think we think it's moot because the possibility is not sufficiently clear, and it's not clear what relief.
That isn't the test.
Very well, Your Honor.
That's not the test, right?
The test is
just the opposite. You've got to show there's no possibility.
I think the test that is whether the court can grant effective relief at this juncture. And it's clear to me that the court could not do anything here that would affect the status quo between the parties as things stand now. If you were to issue a judgment saying the district court was correct or incorrect on its ruling, that would not affect the status quo as to the state of Wisconsin's ability to engage in lethal depredation control. That is controlled for the moment by the fact that the wolf has been delisted. And only if that future event occurred, would there be the possibility of the court, would there be a situation in which the court could grant effective
relief?
Well,
that's real relief if you're on that side of the case.
We would be delighted, Your Honor. I'm not averse to the court reaching the merits. We've briefed the merits to some extent. I would ask if the court
I'm just surprised that you're the parties, all of you, reading of the mootness law. That's not what the mootness law says. It says that someone coming in other words, you're talking about almost a voluntary secession type case. And
I don't think this is a voluntary secession.
Well, you have done something. It's analogous to us. You claim you've done something to remove the claim that they otherwise had, a viable claim that they otherwise had. And
no,
when you advance that, you've got to be able to say, and there's no possibility that the offending contact will reappear, right?
No, I don't think I disagree with Your Honor respectfully at the initial premise that this is a voluntary secession.
No, I'm saying it's analogous to it.
All right, I think
you still got to be able to show there's no possibility of coming back, right?
I think in the case of governmental action, I think, assuming that's a correct statement, and quite honestly, I can't say that I know the answer to that question, but assuming Your Honor is correct, I think in the case of governmental action, the courts generally do grant a fair amount of deference to the government. That is, if the government rescinds a rule or...
If it's final.
Well, and the delisting rule is, of course, final. It's being challenged, but that doesn't make it non-final. So, at this juncture, perhaps I should...
Let me ask you one other question.
Sure.
That's been nagging me. It's an aside. It doesn't mean that the parties don't deserve an answer, but why do you all care?
Oh, we care very much.
What does each side think they're going to get out of this?
If
I ask you first because you're standing there, what is it you think you're going to get if it's vacated?
It's very important to the government that it be vacated because of the potential collateral estoppel effect of this. This is a ruling that said no matter how necessary we find lethal depredation control to be anywhere, it's not limited to the territory of Wisconsin, we don't have the authority to do this. Immediately after the district court decision was entered in this case, the plaintiffs below, the appellees here, and there's a letter that appears, that recounts this, appears starting on page 406 of the joint appendix. We were threatened with the same appellants or the same parties, the plaintiffs in the district court, amending their complaint to challenge the Michigan lethal depredation control permit, which was still in effect, but bring that case before the same judge where almost certainly we would have gotten the same ruling.
And you would have had the right to appeal.
We would have had the right to appeal, but in future litigation, there is the possibility of a future district court, the same district court, if they happen.
One possibility of one other district court deciding to follow it or not. It's not controlling precedent, and then you have the right in any case, no matter where it is the trial is, to go to the Court of Appeals and get an answer.
But the concern in any, the reason for vacating a district court judgment in any case, including this one, is the potential collateral estoppel effect in future litigation. And if collateral estoppel applies, I'm not saying.
But if your moot is, if the case is moot, as everybody apparently agrees, then it would be established that you could not have appealed,
right,
and that's normal prerequisite for giving collateral estoppel effect.
No, I respectfully disagree with the Honor's reading of the law. In fact, in Munsingware, that's what happened to the government. The case became moot. The government did not move to vacate, and the Supreme Court subsequently held the government was bound in future litigation. I believe Your Honor will find that the case law generally holds it's not enough in order to defeat the future effect of collateral estoppel that the case became moot on appeal. You must move to vacate. You cannot sit back. That's what the mistake the government made in Munsingware. The government did not right, seek to vacate the judgment. It simply said the first appeal was moot. So yes, we do have a concern. I'm not saying, by the way, that we think collateral estoppel would be correct. To be fair with the court, the government vigorously opposes offensive use of collateral estoppel against the government, but there's a sufficient risk there. And generally, courts in granting motions to vacate don't require, and I don't see how you could realistically require, the party seeking vacater to prove that this will in fact be successfully used against us in future litigation. Nobody could do that. But there is a risk here. The law is sufficiently uncertain as to what the potential collateral estoppel effect might be. Another argument we might make is this is a pure question of law that the district court decided.
Right.
But there's a risk, and generally collateral estoppel doesn't apply.
What if the case were put in abeyance pending termination of the delisting litigation?
I think that would probably be a reasonable approach to take. And with that, if I may, I don't want to intrude on my co-counsel's time that she has available. Well, actually, no, my time's not quite expired. At this point, let me at least address the vacator issue if the court is going to proceed in that direction. I think it would be reasonable. In fact, I believe our co-appellants actually suggested that. If not in their brief, they at least suggested it when we initially filed this as simply a motion to vacate before the lower court. But if the court does reach the vacator issue, I mean,
suggested what? What are you saying? Hold it in abeyance?
Yeah, I think if I understood Judge Williams correctly, was suggesting was why not hold the case in abeyance to see what happens in the district court? If we prevail, I assume what he's suggesting is that
what's the status of that case?
I think it's actually summary judgment motions are currently pending. Mr. Rodriguez is trial counsel. Yeah, it's fully briefed, and I think is it summary judgment? So it's awaiting decisions on summary judgment. Of course,
if held in abeyance, you're still subject to, as you argue, having this precedent applied against you.
Yes, but right now there's a delisting for the Western Great Lakes segment. There's a delisting. There's also a recent delisting rule that's come out for the Rocky Mountain states. So there's at least some alleviation of that concern. But we may lose one or both of those cases, in which case we're back with states seeking authority to engage in lethal depredation control. Of course,
I'm not following your argument at all now. On the one hand, you say, don't leave us in this position with this decision there because it may affect us adversely. But on the other hand, you say, well, yeah, that would be okay to hold it in abeyance even though the same decision that you're worried about will now be there to affect you.
Well, I think while our appeal is pending before this court, and we have a motion to vacate pending before this court, I think the threat of that is a lot less than if the court denies.
Why? As a legal matter or just as judges would be more respectful of your argument?
I think both. In other words, I think
as a legal matter, judges would be foreclosed from following the district court decision here?
I think while there's an appeal pending, we could legitimately argue, and we've moved to vacate. We've done everything under the law we can possibly do. Mm-hmm. But this court has decided to wait because of uncertainty as to whether the case is even moot at all to decide the motion to vacate. Yes, I think we would be protected.
It's not so much a question of following it as treating it as binding under collateral estoppel, right?
That's right.
That's what you're concerned with.
Yes, that is, as I understand the law, a you know, the basis for vacating a district court ruling. Obviously, it's not precedential, but it is, does have a potential collateral estoppel effect unless we appeal and we move to vacate as we have done and the court grants vacater. We do face a risk, not a certainty, but a risk of collateral estoppel application in the future. I see my time has expired and I don't want to intrude on co-counsel. If the court has any further questions, though, I'll certainly attempt to answer them.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I represent Safari Club International and Safari Club International Foundation. We were granted intervener status as of right in the court below. We're appellants in this litigation. We separately filed a motion to vacate the determination of the court below based on the same premise that we too believe that the case below is in fact moot, or the challenge below is moot. We believe it's moot because the Fish and Wildlife Service, who are the defendants or the appellants, our co-appellants, filed a final rule, issued a final rule that removed gray wolves from endangered status. That is as final as it gets. Yes, the group of plaintiffs have moved to challenge, have challenged that rule, but that doesn't change the finality of the status of gray wolves right now. Yes, they may be successful, and it is possible.
The issue of probabilities. I mean, unless to a substantial degree the possibility of there being relief for the plaintiff, meaningful relief, is foreclosed, then the case is largely foreclosed. The case would be technically not moot.
Well, I would. We would have to go into the facts of that case in order to determine the probabilities and possibilities. But to say, I can put it this way, that the wolves have in fact recovered in the specific area that is at issue in this case, and to the effect that one of the main plaintiffs, one of the named plaintiffs in an earlier case that challenged the reclassification of wolves from endangered to threatened status, chose not to challenge the wolf delisting. But there is another issue that, or another possibility, and that possibility is perhaps the court will not uphold the delisting of wolves in the Western Great Lakes. But that doesn't mean that that court is necessarily going to invalidate the final rule. The court could remand for further explanation. There are other alternatives. Nonetheless, it's a final determination that wolves are now delisted and permits are no longer necessary. We have filed a motion to vacate because the action that caused this case to become moot was the action of the Fish and Wildlife Service in doing what they had said they were going to do for some time. It was it predated this litigation to challenge the permits. They started out by attempting to reclassify wolves from endangered to threatened, and when that was not upheld by the court, they went back, they redid the rule, and they then removed wolves from the endangered species list. But they proposed the delisting prior to the date that the permits were issued and prior to the date that the plaintiffs
filed. Any other cases that you found, like the Wyoming 10th Circuit case? I mean, the thing that's interesting, if you're right that it's mooted here, is that you have intervener status as right. You have party status, and you didn't cause or could not have caused the mooting action. 10th Circuit said that was enough justified vacation. Do you have any other authority? If you weren't standing here alone, I think the government's case is, in my view, is much harder because they caused it, at least thinking about the mootness jurisprudence. But in this situation, you're an intervener by right. You could not have caused it, did not, and you're appealing. Any cases other than Wyoming?
Well, that case is the only case where an intervener was able to do so independently. There's another case called Kitlusisti versus ARCO, in which both the government and interveners were able to obtain vacatur of a decision involving an action by the government that changed the status of the case, that mooted the case. And both the defendant interveners and the government in that case were able to do so. There are other cases such as Jones versus Temer, which is another Tenth Circuit case, in which a party who was affected by an action during the course of a proceeding was able to request vacatur based on a governmental action, even though the government wasn't a party.
We're going a little far there, but in any event, what's the ARCO case?
Do you want the citation?
You have it in front of
me. I do. It's in our brief, and it's 782 Fed Second 800. It's a Ninth Circuit case from 1986. The only other point that I wanted to mention, other than the fact that Safari Club is a bystander, is also that the only defense that the appellees have made to our motion to vacate is that we should have expedited or asked for expedited review. And that is not a basis upon which courts in this jurisdiction have permitted or had to have denied vacatur. In fact, a case that we did not cite in our brief, and I apologize for that, I learned about it subsequently, is Fund for Animals, Inc. versus Hogan, 428 Federal 3rd, 1059. The D.C. Circuit, 2005. In that case, the court refused or granted vacatur, but refused to acknowledge the argument that unsuccessful litigants in the court are prevented from vacatur if they do not expedite their appeal. Thank you. I understand my time is up. I appreciate the opportunity to argue today.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Senna Knudsen on behalf of the plaintiff appellees.
Mr. Knudsen, let me just, so you have the full, if your advocates normally like to know where a judge's head is, so you can address my concern as it affects your case. If you are right in your concession with your colleagues on the other side that the case is moot, for me, it's very troublesome that there is an intervener of right here who could not have caused the mooting action. As I read the mootness jurisprudence, that means we ought to vacate.
Your Honor, let me address the mootness concern first. Here, as Your Honor pointed out, there is pending litigation at the district court challenging the Great Lakes wolf delisting. And so if this court were inclined to find mootness and vacate, I think that the better course of action would be to hold this case in abeyance so that...
So you're saying you have no answer to my concerns and your next best position would be for us to just hold it in abeyance?
No, I have an answer
to
your concern about...
Well, I'd like to hear what that is, because it isn't clear to me that I should think about holding it in abeyance if there's a clear answer on vacate and vacature.
Okay. In terms of the Safari Club status here, Your Honor raised the Wyoming case out of the Tenth Circuit.
And you cited one other case. Are there any cases to the contrary where there's an intervener by right who could not have caused the mootness and did not, even though they benefit from it, they could not have caused it?
We have not found a case where we're presented with the situation where you have an intervener and the federal government that are both appellants and where one or both of the appellants are seeking vacature, but where vacature was only caused by the federal government. In the Tenth Circuit case, I think the key distinction in that case is that the federal government did not appeal. So there, the interveners really were standing alone.
Why does that matter?
It matters because under the rule in Bancorp, we know that vacature is inappropriate where there's a voluntary
So we would deny the government's motion and grant the intervener's motion.
Well, when you've got co-appellants, then you have the problem of creating a serious loophole in Bancorp.
I'm not sure what the loophole is. If you have a party who is a party of right, and they are properly in this litigation and can go as far as the Supreme Court, they can take this case. They're parties in this case, a matter of right. And they're here now saying, we all agree it's moot, but we didn't cause it, couldn't have caused it, and if you read the line of cases that we're all looking at, there's no way we can't claim and get vacature.
Well, Your Honor, I think that, one, in terms of the loophole, it does subject the Bancorp rule to abuses if you have co-defendants or co-appellants where one can cause vacature, but the other party can benefit from.
You weren't suggesting that there was a plot ab initio that Safari International joined in anticipation of the intriguing pattern of events that has followed.
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting some grand conspiracy here.
So why is it exactly a loophole?
But what we have here is, in addition to the problem of having the co-appellants where one would benefit from the mooting action of the other, Safari Club in this case characterizes himself as a guiltless victim. I'd like to point out that on February 8th is when the final delisting rule was published. That rule did not take effect until March 13th. So during at least that time period, we know that the Safari Club was aware that the delisting rule would in fact delist the Great Lakes Wolves and cause this appeal to become moot, and yet there was no action on their part to try to seek expedited review in this case.
Why should they have to? I'm not getting that at all. I mean, it is an explanation of the events, but I can't tie it to anything of any consequence.
Not to mention what difference it would
make. Yeah, right, what difference?
Well, Your Honors, this court in Mahoney v. Babbitt took a look at an issue where, in that case, there was, in the district court, a preliminary injunction granted on a Thursday, the Thursday before a parade was supposed to take place on a Monday. The appellants sought relief from this court, emergency relief, and received relief on Sunday. The parade was on Monday. It was a known mooting event to the parties. And this court denied vacature because the then appellants did not seek further emergency relief or a stay from the Supreme Court in between Sunday when the relief was granted and Monday when the known mooting event was to take place. That was a one-day difference. Here, we're dealing, most conservatively, we're dealing with Safari Club knowing on February 8th that their appeal would become moot on March 13th. But we also know that back in August 9th, 2006, is when the preliminary injunction motion was granted. And at that point, both Safari Club and the federal defendants had an automatic right to appeal. Neither of them did that. Which
so
just sets the stage.
The interval involved there would have been.
It would have been
months,
about seven.
August to February.
August to February would have been 6 months. August to the date when the final rule took effect would have been a little over 7 months, and neither one of the appellants sought review at that point, which is what the reason why it matters.
I don't know whether you know the answer to this. I certainly don't. What is the track record of this court on intervention in wildlife issues, emergency intervention in wildlife issues? I mean, First Amendment issues, you have a parade scheduled for a particular day. We make great efforts to get the issue resolved, but I at least don't recall any pattern of such zeal for wildlife issues one way or the other.
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to your question, but I would submit that that it shouldn't make a difference in terms of how we expect the appellants to behave as to what kind of case.
It makes a difference in terms of the behavior of this court. And I take it the whole thing about delaying is a notion that if you'd moved smartly, the court would have acted. I'd seriously question that.
Well, as I read Mahoney v. Babbitt, what that case is telling us is that even if there is a small chance that emergency relief is could be granted.
I think there's no chance based on our history. I'm sitting here thinking, why would we even enter? We would smile and say, denied. We've got other cases. Why would we? We don't know. Agencies are so... I don't want to say whimsical, they are so unpredictable in how they'll move. They may say we're scheduled to issue a move on X date, they may change their mind, we wouldn't get in the middle of it.
Well, here, Your Honor.
And if the only thing the party is saying is, we have the possibility of a case mooting, we have a win, and they're going to do something that they're lawfully entitled to do, and gee, that would be unfortunate, we would say, oh, please go away. That we would never expedite for that. I can't imagine. I mean, we've done it, but I'd be stunned.
Your Honor, I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that Safari Club.
This is not a parade. It is not the same case. If there's a parade down Constitution Avenue, we know it's going to happen. It's a big event, big First Amendment issues. We've got to get to it. Otherwise, it's beside it. This case isn't going away. That's what we would say to ourselves. This case is going to, they're going to keep fighting forever.
Your Honor, I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that Safari Club stands before this court now.
Not unreasonably.
And says that it's a guiltless victim and that it was vigorously trying to pursue its appeal, that its opportunity for appellate review would be denied. And yet, we juxtapose that with the fact that they've done nothing to move this appeal along, even though.
But what we're saying is, what Judge Williams was suggesting to you, you can't assume what they did was unreasonable if they had no possibility of it moving any faster than it's moved. I can't imagine why our court would grant expedited treatment if they had explained this scenario. It's just such an uninteresting scenario, and we have other cases that are more pressing.
Your Honor, I appreciate that we probably think these cases are
No,
important.
I didn't say the case wasn't important. I said the scenario is uninteresting, which is we have to be interested to leap to expedition to move you ahead of other people in the line. We see a million cases like this. They're all important, but we have to keep people in line in processing cases.
Your Honor, I think that the thing to keep in mind here is that what Bancor tells us is that vacature is an extraordinary equitable remedy. And
right,
it's
so you agree, let me just, here's what we're down to, I think. You agree if they had come up alone and the government said, we have other stuff to do, appeal if you want, we don't really care, they would get vacature. But if the government joins them, that is legally significant that the government is here on appeal and we should deny vacature on those terms. That's what this case comes down to.
I think the combination of the government being here on appeal and the fact that the Safari Club haven't shown that they have vigorously pursued this appeal and that they've done anything other than join the federal government in sitting on their hands and waiting for this delisting decision to come down the tracks and moot this case. And I think under those circumstances, you have to consider that this is an equitable remedy and it's not one that they're entitled to. And at that point, under these circumstances of this case, it would be inequitable to grant.
I forgot to ask you. I asked the other side. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But I did anyway, didn't I? Sorry. What do you think you get if you win? So what is my attitude? What do you think you really have of any moment?
Well, one.
This doesn't determine your case. But I am curious as a judge. Sometimes you read these records and you say, I'm not sure why the parties are fighting over this. I've heard the government's answer. What's your answer?
Well, in part, our answer is that we do know that we have the delisting litigation pending. We also know that the federal government's delisting of the Northern Rocky Mountain population of the gray wolves is being challenged. And if either one of those decisions if either one of those challenges are successful, we will be back in the same position where we're fighting over the Section 10A1A permits.
So how does the vacature or non-vacature of this district court's decision in this case somehow advantage you?
Well, as a practical matter, it means that the little red stop sign that clerks pull up, when they pull up the case, isn't in the corner and
well, sometimes they read through the little red stop sign to see what the reasoning was.
I agree they should.
So then I don't understand as a practical matter how you disadvantage the case, whatever the reasoning was, doesn't disappear. So to the extent that it's powerful, it's still available.
Your Honor, I agree, and I agree that it's powerful.
I'm not going to waste your time on my curiosity.
No, the only thing that I would say there is that we know that under vacature, when a party asks for vacature, it's their burden to show that vacature is in the public interest. And that's because Bancor tells us that judicial precedents are not the property of private litigants. So here, to the extent that it's a wash in terms of whether the underlying decision is beneficial to us or beneficial to federal government or beneficial to neither, if it were to be vacated, here it is their burden to show that the public interest does require vacature, and they've not shown that here, and therefore the judicial opinion that was well thought out and on an undeveloped legal issue should be allowed to stand.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Does Mr. Spitzer have any time? All right, why don't you take a minute?
Okay. On the duty to expedite issue, first of all, Mahoney versus Babbitt did not deal with that issue. The question there was whether the government could have appealed, or the government didn't appeal in that case. That was is the distinguishing factor. That case does not apply here. It does not create a duty if you have even a few days to go to the court and ask for an expedited appeal. That argument is contrary to the Fund for Animals versus Hogan case. Like Safari Club, we apologize for the fact that we did not cite it, but we submitted as controlling on that issue in this circuit. And I don't think there's any prejudice to the other side in that Fund for Animals is now, we understand it, part of the Humane Society, and in fact, counsel in that case is all, Mr. LeBourne is also listed on the brief here. Finally, Judge Williams asked about, was there any experience with a similar type of situation where expedited review had been sought? We cited such a case. It is Sierra Club versus Norton. It was within the last few years in this court. It was an ESA case. Approximately the same time period between the district court judgment and when the case did become moot, like here, it was basically agreed that the case was moot. We asked for expedited relief. We did get it, but the case became moot anyway. The court, despite its very best efforts, didn't come close to deciding the case.
What was the interval involved there?
I think it was only the order of 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. What happened was we were ordered to basically reevaluate something we didn't think we should have had to reevaluate during that time period. The permitted issue in that case became moot in a period of 4 to 5 months. That is the period here, by the way. The district court's final judgment was in September. We obviously have, the government has a period under the federal rules.
Someone got expedition, you got expedition?
We got expedition because in that case we were submitted to, the government was under a burden to take a specific regulatory action. We were ordered to do things that we thought we shouldn't have been ordered to do and would involve substantial cost. That wasn't the case here. We couldn't have even, we don't think, have gotten expedition. In any event, the lesson of that case is, even if we'd gotten expedition, it wouldn't have been realistically decided.
In that case, is there any indication how far we had moved along, given the expedition? Often expedition is not so fast.
I have the advantage of having been counsel in that case, so I could say the briefs were not even, to the best of my recollection, the briefs weren't even in and when the case became moot. Certainly, oral argument had not taken place. Yeah. By the time we got to argument, everybody recognized the case was history. As far as, well, we had an argument that it wasn't moot, but we didn't prevail on that. The court did, by the way, vacate the district court's ruling in that case. So we submit on that authority that it was totally unrealistic to think we could have gotten a ruling from this court in the time period, or that the Safari Club could have done so. Thank
can
you.
Think you need the intervener for the vacature? I mean, everybody's talking about Bancor as if we haven't interpreted it to be limited to settlements, first of all, and second, even that National Black Police Association, as windy as it was, didn't say anything about, and if there is a regulation or legislation passed, we have to wait until somebody might challenge it.
Right. No, I think the government, you know, this was the argument I would have made during my argument in chief if I had not gotten off on the question of whether the case is really moot or not. But yes, I think the government does, with all due respect, have a persuasive case for vacator here because this was an independent action. It was according to a schedule that was set forth in the Act, and that schedule was already in effect. We were already under a duty to take a final action by the time, not only that the case was decided, but by the time the case was even filed. The Fish and Wildlife Service could not have said here, we're not going to act on delisting. It's true, of course, they did decide to delist, but the decision to delist is not an open-ended policy decision they can make for any reason they choose. They have to look at the best scientific data available, best scientific and commercial data available under the statute. And the reasons, the statutory provisions, the regulatory provisions that govern delisting are different from the provisions here. That's also, I think, a crucial distinction. This is not a decision taken in response to a district court decision to overturn that decision or to manipulate the process. It's an independent decision arrived at based on the status of the species and its very substantial recovery in the states that are at issue. not in attempt to undo the district court's decision. We'd very much like, if we could, to get this issue of whether we have the authority to issue these depredation control permits resolved. If the court, by the way, does decide the case isn't moot and it wants to decide the case on the merits, we would request the opportunity to brief that more thoroughly than we've done in this context. Thank you.